Right. So has anybody had a chance to look at it at all? I mean, I'm expecting the answers now, but okay. So we talked about this compartments and labeling idea, and asbestos is going back to it, although they've gone back to it with terminology that I find confusing. And in one case, it's because they chose terminology that was already taken. And it may be that in the other case, it's because I chose terminology that was already taken. So I want to draw that out and point out a couple of very clever things that they're doing. So I said when I talked about multi-level security kinds of things that part of the idea is that documents and things of this sort are going to have both a level and a set of compartments that they're in. And I described sort of a matrix in which you have sort of two different axes for these things. Separate from that conversation, I talked about the key safe mechanism, okay, which is a reference monitor and a set of confined subsystems, right, that the reference monitor conditionally permits communication between. Okay. And I described these boxes as compartments. And in hindsight, I've realized that that terminology is actually not consistent with the way the terms are used in the MLS literature. Okay, so a better way to say this is, I'm going to make up a term, and I'm not sure this is a term I like, that this thing is a cell, and inside each cell we have some number of processes running, all of which have exactly the same security attributes. Okay, and instead of putting the label on a process, we put the label on a cell. Now, what's the label? Okay, the label is a set, a pair. Okay, consisting of a level and a set of compartments. Okay, so when people talk about labels in the context of mandatory access control, they're usually talking about some formulation close to this one. And there are, 15 little variations. What I didn't talk about at any point in that conversation that I remember is discussion about what are the rules for communication. So the general sort of overarching rule in this story is that you can read down and you can write up. So the general idea is it's okay for information to go from less sensitive zones to more sensitive zones. Okay, and it's not okay for information to go from more sensitive zones to less sensitive zones. Right? This seems pretty basic. Now there's a problem with this, which is how do you enforce it? And there are four or five major implementations. The two that are sort of probably the most widely known, one is the low watermark implementation. And so in the low watermark implementation, what happens is as the information flows, it contaminates the receiver. Okay, so if I'm sending some information and it's higher security than what you're allowed to do right now, what happens is, as a consequence of receiving the information, your process gets booted into this higher security context, but its connections to the outside world do not. Okay, so for example, I could have a process talking to a low security terminal session, and that process could receive a message from some other process that was top secret. And what will now happen is the receiving process will go to top secret, the terminus session will not, And a consequence of that will be that the process's attempts to communicate to me after that moment will fail. Because we don't know what it's sending to me. Okay, so there's sort of this contaminating view. You can imagine that what happens when you adopt this contaminating strategy is everything in the system rapidly floats towards the top. Okay, because once you're in this contaminated state, you can't back down in most of the system designs because there's no way to know that the process has actually dropped all of the sensitive information that it had. Okay. In the general case, there are some proposals for how to do that. Those are sort of later refinements. Because of this, cream floats to the top, although whether it's cream is very much subject to debate. There was a refinement that was done pretty quickly on that, which is to say, look, there should be two levels, right? One is the level at which you're sending, okay? And the other is the maximum level that I'm willing to receive. And what should happen, and the receive guard is saying, I don't want to be contaminated above a certain level because I have to stay within a certain zone to do my job, so I don't want to accept any information that would cause me to escalate too high. Okay. So on the send side, there's a label that says, what's the classification of what's being sent? And on the receive side, there's a filter that says, what's the classification I'm willing to take? And if the sent information exceeds the filter, the message does not go through. So what you end up with then is something that can be called split labels. Okay. And so if we're looking at a process P, it has P sub S, which is its send label. Right? That describes the current state of P. Okay. And P sub R, which is its receive label, which is the max it's willing to accept. So what I described before as messages between compartments is just sloppy verbiage, right? What's really going on in the key safe system is message between cells where the decision about whether the message is allowed to pass is made according to the labeling rules and the transmission rules. Okay. And the rule in general is that if P and Q are communicating, and P is the sender, okay, then the message is going to go through, just make sure I get the terms of this right. So if P's trying to send a Q, right, the message will go through if the send labels are in some sense lower than the receive labels, right? Because Q won't accept anything higher than Q sub R. Now we have to define what we mean by lower, and the answer is it's a lattice definition. Right? We are going to define a partial order, and according to that partial order, we're going to decide which messages are okay. So, asbestos is a prototype research operating system that's trying to explore these ideas a little more fully. And the history here is that at least in the classic versions of these systems, which were the ones that were sort of rolled up and codified in the Orange Book, the number of compartments and levels that the system needs to support is actually fairly limited. I think the magic number was 64 compartments, and I don't remember how many levels the system had to support. And what the asbestos guys have said is, well, you know, the problem with this is that maybe 64 compartments would work if the compartments are sort of universally defined as a matter of administrative policy. In fact, that's probably not enough. I mean, there are many more compartments than that in active use today. But maybe for one system that would be enough. But the reality is that a lot of the policies we want to deal with are application-defined policies, and they have to do with information flow about content that the application really needs to deal with. And the application needs to be able, not necessarily to say what all of the rules are, but at least to identify new categories that may not have existed when the system was designed. So we need a way to generate, to introduce new kinds of compartments in the system for purposes of this classification. And the idea is we're going to continue to exploit the same basic information flow relationship, but we're going to let applications extend it by creating new categories, new compartments. Existing compartments cannot be evaded. So it is not the case that the label has one compartment. It's the case that a label is a set of compartments, right? And what we're doing by allowing applications to define new compartments is we're allowing them to extend the existing set. So the asbestos guys want to play with a system for doing this, and they want to explore in particular one aspect of the cost of protection. And it's something we talked about in this class, that when you have a shared server, if the server is responsible for keeping information separate, but it has to serve different users, if it's supposed to keep those users separate, or conversely, if it serves data at different classification levels and it's got to keep that data separated, right? In effect, it needs to be able to prove that it's done so. One of the problems with that is the minute it takes as input a blob of data from a high security context, the file server gets contaminated to the high security. And once it gets contaminated to the high security, it can no longer disclose even unsensitive data because we don't know which bits are which. Right? So we need a way to track that. And that's what the asbestos guys are trying to explore, is how do we track it, and also how do we track it cost effectively. What they've introduced is a hybrid notion of what they mean by a compartment. Okay, so their story for what a label is not exactly this story, right? It's not the classic story where you have public, sensitive, secret, top secret, and then separately you have this bitmap of compartments. The story that they have is that, get some real estate here. That a label is a set of pairs where the first thing in the pair is the compartment ID, okay? And the second thing in the pair is the level with respect to that compartment. And this is a different kind of a level. This is not going to be used for secret, top secret. That's not the intent here. These levels are purely for purposes of information flow. What they're reproducing is something qualitatively similar to a ring-like structure in the pending protection system. And a label, as a whole, consists of a set of these things. And here's the rule. The general rule is the send label has to be lower than the receive label. What that means is, pairwise, for all compartments, the sender's level has to be less than the receiver's level on the same compartment. Also, in their labels, there's a catch-all, okay? Let me explain levels before I do the catch-all. What are the levels? Okay, the levels are zero through three, okay? And a special level star, which is going to be tricky to explain. And the catch-all is 0 through 3, okay? So, and the catch-all is, in practice, is either 2 or 3, according to whether this is a send level or receive label, level send label or receive label, and that'll make more sense in a second. So the catch-all is, in the absence of having specifically said that compartment X has level 2, if I see some compartment that wasn't explicitly identified in that way, like the default answer is 2, or whatever that default label is, default level is. Okay. This list is kept in the kernel. Or at least the definitive version of this list is kept in the kernel. Sorry, somebody had a question here?
I think you just answered it. The two at the end is not part of a tuple. It's just a naked two to say that anything else that's not defined is...
I think the way to think about it is it's part of a wildcard tuple, right? Which says if all else fails and the label matches this, it should be whatever this level is. The catch is, if I were going to write a wildcard tuple, the traditional thing I would write there would be star.
Right.
Okay, and if I wrote star there, I'd get in trouble with the level notation, which has already used star. Okay, but the answer to your question is yes. I wish they had chosen anything else for that funny level. Splat would work fine. Okay, so this scheme is in some sense neither a fish nor a fowl, right? These aren't quite classical TCSec compartments, and they aren't quite classical TCSec levels. It's not what they're designed to encode. So let's look at what's going on here. The reason you want levels for compartments is because it provides a way to restrict communication. I mean, certainly, if I set up a process at level zero, let me explain why this default is I said that catch-all label, that catch-all level is generally speaking 2 on the receive side and 3 on the send side. Why? Because if I choose 2 and 3, what I get is, no, that communication is not permitted. Because the send level of 3 is greater than the receive level of 2. So setting this in this way essentially provides a catch-all. Things that are not explicitly permitted are prohibited. Okay. Think of this as the Russia model of civil liberties. Okay, got at least one laugh out of that. It's early in the morning, so we have to work a little harder. If I went the other way, right, if I said this normal send level is 2 and the normal receive level is 3, okay, this would be the sort of the promiscuous model of communication, that unless the compartments say otherwise, everything's going to be permitted. So you can sort of see that you can do either subtractive or additive policies here. Right? You could say, look, the default is let it through, but then I can restrict. Or you could say the default is don't let it through, and then I can allow. Okay. And the reason there are 4 numeric levels in this scheme is that by playing with choice of levels on the send side and the receive side, you can do mixtures of these policies. And that's what the paper walks through. So encoding for compartments, if you want to use what they're calling compartments for TCSec style compartments, right? The compartments were like the nuclear stuff versus the submarine stuff versus the senator sex scandal stuff, right? You can understand why that would want to be classified. At least the senator wants that to be classified. I guess this week it's actually been, this week it was congressman and fiscal scandals, right? But who was the guy from California who just stepped down?
Randy Cunningham.
Yeah. All right, not going to go there. Stay out of that. Big enough swamp without my help. So the way you encode TCSec compartments is you simply create a compartment in this scheme corresponding to the TCSec compartments, okay, and then you're going to set the levels in the 2 and 3 fashion according to whether the receiver is authorized with respect to that compartment.
Do you have two separate sets of these labels?
One for send and one for receive, yes. Careful. So there's a bit of confusing terminology here. Yes, I would also find it natural to say a set of labels, but that's not the terminology. The terminology is a label which consists of a set of compartment and level pairs.
So you have two labels.
So there are two labels, a send label and a receive label. Okay, and those reflect outgoing and incoming communication. There's discussion in the Hadass paper that they're also applying labels to pages. It's not immediately obvious to me how they're actually implementing that. I believe them that they've done it. There's a problem with it, which I'll come to, time permitting. It's a performance problem, not a technical problem. Okay. They're using a trick which allows them to also encode levels using this scheme. Okay. So, generally speaking, in the classical TCSec levels, right, you really only have one set, right? It goes from public to top secret, and it's, I don't know, four levels or five levels by the time you're all done with it. They keep playing with it. And the way they encode this in this scheme is really kind of clever. They say, oh, well, what we'll do is we'll create a set of compartments corresponding to the levels. Okay. So we'll have a public compartment, and the public compartment is set in such a way that anything can go into it. That's fine. Okay. And we'll have a sensitive compartment, and we'll have a secret compartment, okay, and we'll have a top secret compartment. And the way we're going to encode which level you're in is, look, if you're in the public level, this one's going to be set to allow communication, and all the others are going to be set to refuse incoming communication. So what that'll mean is, if I'm in the top secret compartment, and I'm trying to send to you and you're not, your top secret compartment will be set lower than mine, and so I will not be able to send you. Okay, so all we're doing here is we're taking the level number. If you just encode the levels as numbers starting at zero, okay, we're just encoding them here using Peano arithmetic. Right, we're going to have one compartment per level. We're going to linearize them. Okay, and think of this as like a level meter. Okay, so. Curious observation. You made the statement the other day, and it's absolutely right, that levels and compartments are sort of orthogonal things. And what's sort of neat about this is this encoding shows that, in fact, that's true in the way the classification scheme is thought about, but it's not necessarily true in the implementation. Okay. But part of the reason it's not true in the implementation is they're able to exploit this level trick on this side to control compartment-wise information flow rates. So they're able to reconstruct it using this more restricted notion of levels in a different place. That was kind of a clever encoding trick. It slides by in like a sentence and a half in the paper. Okay, so take note of that as you go by, that this claim that they're going to encode the levels in this funny way is actually kind of clever. It also means that they can do level systems which don't have a total order. Right? Conceivably, they could do two parallel levels, neither of which was allowed to communicate to the other, but both of which were above public and both of which were below secret. Okay, and that's sort of a crossover between what's expressible here and what's expressible in TCSec. Okay, this scheme is not quite rich enough. There are some things that you want to do that the scheme that I've described so far can't quite handle. And so, as is so often the case in these things, you start with something very simple, and then you escalate it into something a little more complicated that sort of resolves progressively harder engineering problems. Okay. So I'm not going to violate this conception as I'm going, but I'm now about to start enhancing it with features. Features, you should understand, is a four-letter word, especially in the context of security design. Okay, the first part is that I may be low security, but I may want to restrict your use of a piece of information. Okay. So even though I'm not sending from a classified context, I may want to force a classified context on the message I'm sending you. So here's the idea. what we're going to do is we're going to revise the right side of this equation. We're going to say now we're going to change the rule for messages that says the message is permitted . We're going to introduce a new label. This is a voluntary label. It's a discretionary label. It's provided by the sender. Okay. The sender says, I am voluntarily increasing the level of the message that I send. Okay. So E stands for effective. This is an effective send label. And the thing to notice is that because of the algebra, there's no way that the sender can downgrade their authority or their restrictions this way. But they can upgrade them on a voluntary basis. And if the recipient can't take the more escalated message, it doesn't go through. That's the first sort of innovation. Enhancement. The second enhancement is equally straightforward. Where did they go with this? Let me just make sure I get this right. The second enhancement is something they call a verification label. This is not about security, it's about integrity. So the rule is now that I want you to prove, before I agree to receive data, that you are at least at a certain level. So here's the problem. You know the expression that bad data drives out good? Maybe not. Garbage in, garbage out? Okay, it's like that. What happens when you feed a lot of garbage into the classification system is you do escalate the classification, but you do not escalate the quality of the information. Okay? And sometimes what you really want to know is how good is the information I'm working on? And that starts at the beginning with a human assessment about sort of the credibility of the information. Right? And now what you want to know is if the credibility of some document doesn't go down because you incorporate lower quality information to it. So this is actually the same kind of lattice system, just going in exactly the opposite direction. We're trying to prevent downgrade. And the way we're doing that is we're going to take the notion of lower integrity, right? So if you take that notion and turn it upside down, what you're trying to do is you're trying to prevent higher integrity from going to lower integrity. It's exactly the dual of the classification problem. So, from the receiver standpoint in that story, what I'm saying is, well, okay, if I take this information, right, I'm going to get contaminated. Before I agree to take it, I want to know that it is at least a certain level of confidence. And on the other hand, you may not want to disclose all of the confidence that you have. Okay. So there's a notion of something called a verification label. Right? And here's how that works. Before, the story so far was the message doesn't go through if the checks aren't satisfied. The story here is that the system will check, V is a voluntary label provided by the sender. The system is going to check that the sender's authorities are at least V. But the operative words are at least. So I could have more confidence than I'm disclosing to you. And this value V is then going to get disclosed as part of the message to the receiver. So the receiver, in addition to the message, is going to get a label that says, and here's the confidence level that's been checked for this message. And we know from transitivity that if V is less than PS and PS is less than QR, we're still okay, right? That V is less than QR, that met the requirement. Good. One more refinement. And this is like screamingly obvious after you see it. Before you see it, you wonder why it didn't anything else. So what's wrong with this story is this ES thing. That often I actually want finer distinctions on who I'm willing to take information from. The last thing I want is some arbitrary process, right, blowing me sky high into the top secret realm. Right. So this ES in some sense is a problem because it allows a sender with no interesting information at all, right, to blow me into a highly sensitive box from which I can't escape. Because in order to find out that I got into the box, I have to take the message. And after I take the message, I'm contaminated. Okay? And I can impose a global filter on how contaminated I'm willing to get. The system does give me that much, but it turns out that's often awkwardly not enough. Right? Really, what I might want to say is, look, I'm willing to accept contamination if I know the source is actually credible, right? But I don't want some arbitrary jerk to put me into this high compartment, because floating up is just a bad thing in general. You know, the more I float up, the less accessible my information is going to get. And if the information isn't accessible, at some point it ceases to be valuable. So we actually like to do these restrictions, in some sense, on a per-sender basis. So the document introduces a notation for a little... Sorry, my handwriting is so terrible that writing this is actually hard. Lowercase pr. That's really intended to be lowercase p, but I can't write it distinctively enough, so I'm going to do it as script p. So the idea now is there's a port. This is the receive limit on the port. And so now we're going to adapt the rule one more time, which is you'll accept the message according to the lesser of your global receive label and your per port receive label. I'm thinking of examples I could give, but they all involve the names of actual real world reporters. And I'm not really sure that I want to be dissing reporters on something that's going to be recorded and put online an hour from now. Actually, I'm sure that I do want to, but I'm sure that I won't. All right. So you have the system here, which have all its checks going on. And there's one more in here that I'm not going to get to, okay? But I wanted to sort of walk through the system so you could see it once. And let me urge you that when you read the labels paper, the meat of the paper is in section 5 and section 6. I personally found the paper confusing. It took me several passes to understand what was really going on. And in hindsight, I think the reason it took me several passes had to do with the order in which things were described. I'm a very linear reader, right? I want to know what's the mechanism, and then I want to know, in the introduction, tell me where we're going, then tell me the mechanism, then show me how the mechanism was used to achieve something, right? The paper actually goes in the other order. It comes up and says, we're going to do magic thing X and magic thing Y and magic thing Z, and you're in section 5 before it's actually talking about the mechanism. The problem is then I have to go back and reread the paper again and ask myself, oh, now that I sort of understand the mechanism, a couple of places which were not described in as much detail as I might have liked, how do I go back and achieve magic thing X or magic thing Y? This is just how papers work for me or don't work. So you may find that you're very frustrated coming from the few sections in the front saying, okay, where's the meat, right? And then you get to section 5 and 6 and suddenly you start to see it. Take the time to go through 5 and 6. It's not complicated math at all. And then you'll probably want to go back and reread the front section of the paper. You should also largely ignore the performance claims in the paper. And I'll tell you why. The second innovation that's introduced in the paper, in addition to this unusual compartmenting scheme, is something that they call event processes. There is a claim made that event processes are much lighter weight than simply starting new processes for each activity. And in particular, there's a claim made that if I start a new process, I have to allocate a schedule, I have to allocate a space, I have to allocate a resource, all this stuff. The problem with this claim is it's wrong. That claim is true, predicated on making a variety of assumptions about the mechanisms of the underlying operating system. And indeed, if the operating system satisfies those assumptions, the claim is right, okay? But the solution is to fix the assumptions. And what they've effectively done in event processes is fix just one of the several assumptions that were wrong. Okay, so if you have first-class scheduling mechanisms, and if you have first-class address spaces independent of processes, and if you have first-class storage allocation, the issue they're inventing event processes to address doesn't actually exist. And if you go look at their number, you'll see they claim the cost per event process is a page and a half. And if you stop to think about it, you will realize that actually that corresponds very closely to the amount of per process state. So what's going on with event process, essentially, think of it this way, that they've established multiple address spaces, right? And they're essentially clobbering the process with the old address space. Instead of attaching the label to the process state, they're attaching it to the address space. And each time they clobber the process, they reinitialize the process to a known state. When you reinitialize it to a known state and attach it to an address space with a known label, it's now safe to reset the process label back to the previous label. Okay. But think about what's happening here. They're changing the scheduling context. They're reloading the TLB. About the only piece of the context which they saved was not reallocating the process structure. It wasn't the allocation of the process structure that was the problem, unless you had a non-persistent system. All right. The question you got to ask about this mechanism, I don't have an answer, but here's the key question in this design. What's the cost of the label checks? And which of them can be kept? If this were a constant compare, it would be no big deal. Okay? But this is a vector compare. It's an element-wise vector compare, because you've got to compare each compartment independently. And the problem is that your label and my label are different. They're different in the sense that there's no guarantee that my compartment X lives at the same location in the vector as your compartment X. Okay. So it's not just that we do a linear pass through the vectors doing a magnitude comparison. And what their kernel does is it keeps these vectors in a sorted form using a somewhat specialized data structure. Okay, and it effectively does a parallel tree compare. And on one side, it fills in the wildcard level. And on the other side, it fills in the wildcard level, right? So it's doing this funny element-wise comparison with this wildcard matching thing going on in the middle. And the good news is that if the message is not going to go through, there are a variety of ways to make sure that failure is detected early. For example, I'll let you read in the paper, actually. But there are ways to roll up partial information where if you fail the partial information test, I don't know which of the subtests you're going to fail, but I know you're going to fail at least one of them, and that's enough to reject the operation, so I don't really care which one it was. The catch is, I have to check all of them in order to determine that the message is okay. And that's expensive. That's really expensive. That could easily right there, right, be the cost of an extra context switch. And not because their implementation is stupid. Yeah, I could see one or two hairy optimizations that I think I could get out beyond what they describe in the paper. And indeed, they may have already done. But the basic implementation they have is actually very clever. The problem here is that the cost of being right is high. Now, if you look at the original operation where I'm doing a level check on sender and receiver, that one can be cached. And the reason that one can be cached is, here's what I know, is that ignoring event processes, which puts a hell of a mess in the soup for caching. Ignoring event processes, I know that QR is only going to go up. So if I ever determine that this message was okay, I don't have to consider any future changes to QR. Because QR in the next generation, right, since QR only goes up, right, QR future is only going to be higher than QR, so whatever check you pass now will still pass in the future. The one that's tricky, and it requires a caching validation, is that when QR goes up, when the receive label goes up, right, the send label also goes up. Once you accept information of a certain level, you rise up to that level and your send level has to go up. So when the send level, so what I could do is I could build a hash table that maps from any pair PSQR to true or false. Okay. And if your theory is what the system floats to a level. And having floated to that level, it tends to remain stable for a period of time. Right? Then this caching trick will work, and the overall design might be viable from a standpoint of performance. Because the idea is, look, the cache check is going to fail a few times as we're doing our adjustments, but any point where you and I are in constant communication, right, we're going to tend to float to this kind of level. There's a fly in the ointment. Oh, by the way, you can also cache this part, the global receive constraint versus the per port receive constraint. Again, the global receive constraint is only going up. Okay, so you can cache this combined result at the port. This cache, however, is not definitive, because what will happen here is QR might float up. You don't want this cached result to float up at the same time just because you don't want to update the cache all the time. So when this cache check fails, what it means is you have to go do the full comparison and then revalidate the cache. So this cache is definitive if it says OK, not definitive if it says no. There are two pieces of this system that do not seem on the face of it to lend themselves to caching. Three, actually. So one is this effective label. And suppose we had the rule that the effective label was strictly greater than the send label. If that were the case, then it follows that the least ever bound of those two labels must be the effective label. This is just basic lattice arithmetic. And if that's the case, we can simplify the operation, and now we can cache the ESQR pair. And the next time the application presents that label again, we'll recognize it, we'll do the cache lookup, we're good. However, the specification of the system does not require this. It should. One way we could do this is we can say, what we'll do, We will remember PS and we'll remember ES, okay? And we'll build a cache that, given a PS and an ES, gives us the dominating label. We can compute that once. We'll have to do an extra step. That might be okay. Because their representation for a compartment plus a level, right, is 64 bits. This is a pretty, this is actually a pretty reasonable thing to hash. So we could reduce a lot of the normative runtime cost here. Assuming these labels are reused, we could reduce a lot of the normative runtime cost with caching trades. The one part that's really hard to do that for is the verification label, because that one, I'm not convinced, I believe, is going to get reused enough to be effectively cacheable. And the one thing that's conspicuously absent in the papers is performance metrics for these IPC operations. If you believe that these caching tricks can be made to work, and there's no evidence in the paper that the group yet sees these opportunities. And careful, because the paper, you have to remember, was submitted at least 6 months before the publication, right? So they've been thinking about it a long time since then, and by now, you know, either they may even have known them at the time and said, we're out of space. Okay? And with these caching tricks, it's plausible. This is the linchpin of this performance story in this system. This plus the assertion that the levels are likely to stabilize. There's also a statement in there that you can use compartments in a capability-like fashion. Okay? And I think I believe it. The one big failure I see in this design is the amount of dynamic storage allocation that appears to be necessary in the kernel. It may be possible to eliminate that at the moment. I do not see how. And we're out of time, but let me tell you a hint. I'll come back to it tomorrow. In the Hadass paper, they say that they are labeling page frames, or pages. Here's the problem with labeling pages. The problem is that every time my receiver's label is escalated, I have to invalidate and rebuild my address space. The good news is, I can still read up. So any page that was previously readable will continue to be readable. The bad news is I cannot write down. So all of my write access to these pages needs to be revalidated. And I either need to do a copy on write on those pages, which would be a legal way out, and then the copy gets my new label. Okay? Or I need some other mechanism for recovery. I haven't seen anything in the papers yet that leads me to understand how they're approaching this issue. It does definitely require a shadow paging structure in the kernel. So the irony of this is this actually drives them into a paging system that's very similar conceptually to the one that we're using for Eros and Hyos. They may have a better implementation because they can do a hardware affine variant that has to do the soft structure, but they still have to do this sort of multi-level paging system. Let's come back to this tomorrow, and I will take questions on this. I urge you to try to read the papers. I know at the end of the semester things are crazy. The reason I want you to read the papers is I want the opportunity to answer your questions because this is on the final. Okay, thanks.